So we've nearly made it through day one. How's it been for you all? It's no small thing to turn up for a day of sitting and walking like we have today. So what kind of world do we live in? I was thinking about what we were talking about last night, actually, when I was wondering what to speak about this evening. And I remember seeing a news article very recently which just showed something very stark, showed something very clearly. And it just showed two pictures of people. One incredibly underweight, starving person, and one dangerously unhealthy, overweight person. And it just said, in the world, people die of starvation and they die of obesity. And that just came to my mind when I was wondering what to talk about tonight. I mean, isn't that kind of stunning that in this world that we live in, some people die of not having enough food, and some people die of having too much food? How crazy. That came out of reflecting on the five mindfulness trainings that we were talking about last night, the five kind of pillars of harmlessness. And just reflecting on the profundity, the real radicalness of those teachings, you know, that we've inherited from the traditions linking back to the historical Buddha. And again, just what kind of world would we live in if the first of those was really truly practiced, to not kill, let alone not taking what's not freely given, and all of the others. And just appreciating what Caroline was saying last night too, about how all of the teachings serve the same purpose in a way. You know, they're not just secondary teachings. You know, they really serve this liberation, this release from suffering, which is possible for us. And then I was thinking, so why do I live in a world where people die of not having enough food and people die of having too much food? And what do we need? What healing is needed? And it struck me that the Vipassana traditions, this is kind of, we're in here, we're in the world of a Vipassana tradition, insight meditation, culture, if you like. The one thing that the Vipassana traditions look after really well is the individual healing. I think if we want to move to a world where people aren't dying of starvation and obesity, I don't see how we can get around change having to happen in the individual person, like each of us. I don't see any way around that. Even though they talk about top-down stuff, solving things through politics and grassroots stuff through community work. There's one piece which you can't get around is that we have to transform here as individuals, don't we? And it seems like that's true to me anyway. So how has it been for you today? How has it been to be in a situation where we can't avoid ourselves so easily? Where we're in a room, in a house, in a property, without so many distractions as we normally have? How has it been to show up for yourself today? What's it really been like to have to sit with yourself and walk with yourself and share a space of silence with, how many are we? 26 plus 2 teachers plus 3 managers. 26, 27, 8, 31? Thank you. 31 of us. Sorry that took a long time to add up the small numbers. But my guess is that it hasn't always been easy today. You know, my guess is that in some way we've met something which feels like struggle in some way. Is that true? All of us, the people in the silence, the yogis, managers practicing in that way, and the teachers, us practicing in that way, we're all practicing here. In different forms, different roles, in different modes. But my guess is that we have been shown or be confronted by something which we could call struggle in a certain way. Just think, is that true? Can be so amazingly difficult to show up to ourselves. To keep meeting every instant of this amazing and kind of inexplicable thing called life, which is happening. For us who have been practicing for a while, this is going to be, we're going to be, have been reacquainted with something here. Something that we know from other retreats, from other times when we sit quietly with ourselves at home. And for those of us who this is the first time meditating, maybe this is the first time we've confronted some part of ourselves today. Which is really a profound thing when you think about it. The world really supports us with our distraction out there. All the shopping, all the entertainment. Really doesn't support us to turn inward and just connect with how we are in any given instant. So to be here, especially for the first time, in this kind of situation, really speaks of a lot of courage. A lot of guts, a lot of curiosity, a lot of strength actually, and commitment to come and try this out. So I don't think that's a small thing. And I was thinking, this, the challenges that we have in the world, the inequality that there is in the world, the lack of peace that there is, the chaos, the injustice, the ecological destruction, the torture, the 27 million slaves that there are in the world. It's exactly the same struggle that we have to sit with here. It's individuals in the world who get caught up in stuff which cause difficulty. In the same way that we're individuals here, sitting with the stuff of our hearts, sitting with the stuff of our impulses, our prejudices, and our wishing that it were different. So that I'm just now really wanting to respect and honour what we have all been doing here today. It's a deeply significant endeavour, experiment, exploration. It's a big thing. And I was talking to a friend the other day. I was talking about setting up a sitting group in London. And she's not really a practitioner, and she was like, that's a bit self-centered, isn't it? You get together, you just sit on your own. Isn't that really self-centered? And I didn't really know what to say to her because I knew what she meant. It does seem self-centered. But now I've had some time to think about it. It seems slightly paradoxical, but it's really radically unself-centered. You know, studying the self, is that the same as being self-centered? It's like selfish means something small and contracted normally, doesn't it? Something not helpful. But we're really studying the self here. We're really studying ourselves. And magically, these selves that we're studying are, they're parts of the living planet, aren't they? They're a part of the world. It's a part of the universe, part of the world, which gets called Paul, but it's just as valid as any other part which needs healing. So what do we really need here for this healing? What do we really need for this self-study to be fruitful? Well, there's so many different ways of talking about this. But the one I want to talk about tonight is being on our own side. Does that make sense if I say that? Being on our own side. You can say that in Finnish. It makes sense to be on somebody's side. I think we really need to be on our own side. What does that mean? So just think about your experience today, coming here, being encouraged to keep being present to each moment's experience, being encouraged to stay present with the breath, being encouraged to keep showing up. In that process, has anybody thought that they were crap or rubbish? Has anybody thought, I can't do this, I knew I'd be bad at this? Or, I've been doing this for years and I still can't do this, I'm so crap. I'm so rubbish, I know I can't do this. I knew I couldn't do it. What am I doing here? Oh, I'm useless. I'm such a and then could be a million different words, but something not nice. Can anybody relate to that today? There's something in us which won't let us just be as we are. There's something which can be so harsh and punishing within us. Can be so destructive in the way that it won't let us just be ourselves as we are. And personally, I think that's the same thing which causes the wars in the world. We just turned outwards or turned inwards. But what is it like to be on our own side? What would it be like to really be here now, as we're sitting here? It's in the middle of a talk, but we're still exploring awareness and presence, aren't we? This is the invitation. We're still invited to return to ourselves, to connect with each moment's experience, to learn to relax with things exactly as they are. So what is it like to be on our own side right now? What is self-acceptance? What is self-love? What can you imagine now? See if you can imagine, see if you can tune into or see any capacity in your being which can be present with how you are, without being judgmental about how you are. What is there in us which can allow ourselves to be exactly as we are, on our own side, here for our own well-being, is another way of saying it. Even though it may be true that I am really disorganized and I really can't follow the breath and life is so complicated and I don't know what I'm doing, does that mean I can't be on my own side? Can I be here with this difficult task and not beat myself up about it? See if you get a sense of that. That's really what I want to kind of talk about tonight, because I think that's something in my own experience which has been so important to me, in the middle of how complicated life can be, and attempts to try and fix it, the place where I've found some relief, and the place where things can unfold well from, is a place of deep acceptance, seems to me, where in the midst of complications and difficult challenges, at least I'm deeply on my own side. And I care for my own well-being. Even though that doesn't directly and immediately make me a good meditator, make me able to focus, make me able to feel okay in all social situations, doesn't make me able to sort out my money life in terms of earning enough, not spending too much. But it tells me how to start doing all those things in a way. So what is this thing in us which can be called the inner critic? Some self-destructive part of our psychology. Some kind of structure that's in us. Well, One way of talking about it is that it's some kind of influence that we carry with us which stops us expanding. It stops us being able to grow. It wants us to keep small. You had that experience. Something in you wants to keep you small and well behaved. I was trying to think of a concrete example of this. And for me, one came up, which was when you're a child, in my experience anyway, I had this belief that it's not good to cry, because if I cry, I'll be teased. So from a young age, it was like, I was brought up in Australia, which is quite a macho culture, two younger brothers, and crying was bad. Not supposed to cry. So something wants to stop me crying, you know, the full flow of emotions, my heart, my body. And at the time, that was useful because it stopped me getting teased. You know, it served a function. But that's not very helpful here. That pattern, I don't need that anymore in this context. And yet, if I feel like I'm about to cry, then something in me is like, no, you shouldn't do that. It's like something jumps on me and stops me. Stops me expanding, stops things flowing. So, yeah, or think of it this way. How often do you have the experience where you think, oh, I should have done it this way, or I should be like this, I should be like that, I should be able to concentrate, I should be able to relax, I should be able to figure this out, I should be able to focus, I should be more enlightened, I should be more flexible, I should be more loving, I should be more strong. I shouldn't be so messy, I shouldn't be so confused, I shouldn't be so insecure. What a world we live in of shoulds and shouldn'ts. How painful is that? We can't be ourselves because we should be something else. Do we have to live like this for the rest of our lives? Is there any way around this situation that we're in? So as we're sitting here these days together, in a way what we're trying to do is discover some resources that we have that we can really rely on for our lives. You know, a capacity, a strength of heart which can be a support for us from the inside in the midst of life's complications and difficulties. It's like we're sitting here, and what actually does happen is that we discover resources in ourselves. We discover some ability to hold us in our grief. Something that we can actually rely on in our lives. So when all the things happen to us in our lives, with our family, our relationships, and our work, and everything that happens to us, which is so madly out of our control, what we actually learn here is, what we uncover, what we cultivate, what we uncover, what we discover, what we tune into, is a strength of heart which can support us. And one thing that stops us connecting to that is this inner critic. You know, we can be really interested about meditation and really passionate about it and want to come and try it out, and we come and we sit down and we try and follow the breath and it works for a little bit, and then it gets really difficult. And then it can sometimes take not very long to think, oh, I knew I couldn't do it, I'm crap. And that is like we're attacked by something. And when we get attacked by that, it's cutting us off from our resources. So, as we start to trust our resources more and more, do you know what I mean by when I say resources? Is that the best word, I wonder? Yeah, our strength of presence, our strength of heart, our stability, our good heart, our presence. The more we connect with that, the more strength we have in the face of these attacks of, oh, crap, it should be different, I knew I wasn't good at this. And the breath is a really interesting one, actually, because I don't know if you have this experience, but sometimes I feel like when I'm resting with the breath, I realise that in some part of myself, I'm actually holding my breath. Somewhere that I'm actually holding my breath. It's like I'm not breathing fully. It feels like in some way I'm holding my breath. I don't know if anybody else has experienced that today, but that feels like the same kind of thing which is stopping me from expanding. The same kind of force which is stopping me from flowing fully. It's like I'm holding my breath. And it's almost as though I'm holding my breath to keep myself small. You know, to stop myself feeling something, expressing something, doing something. And it's almost like there's this thing watching me to keep me in check, to make sure I'm well behaved, to make sure I meet the image of how I'm supposed to be. So we've got this inner critic going on, and it says should all the time, and it bases how you should and shouldn't be on some kind of ideal image of how you should be. So how do you think you should be as a meditator? How do you think you should look while you're sitting here? Have we got an image of that? Should we look like this? Should we look like this? Should we look like this? Should we be actually shining golden light? Should we be able to be completely still? Should we be able to follow 150 breaths without wandering? Should we like everybody else in the room? Should we like the way everybody else dresses in the room? Should we be cool and aloof, but present and warm, all at the same time? We don't put a foot wrong. And we haven't got an overdraft, we've got a happy family at home, we love our work, work-life balance is perfectly right, I've got a really good diet, and, you know, a solar-powered car. What image do we have with us that we should be if we're going to be conscious beings? And then what happens when we find out that we're not like that? So is our practice about trying to fit the image? There's a question for all of us. If we want to be conscious beings, how are we going about that? Are we trying to force ourselves somehow, cut off the bits we don't like that don't meet the image, stick on some bits that do meet the image, and force ourselves to be this ideal, enlightened, perfect, spiritual person? Maybe we're not. But if we are, does that sound like a good strategy or not? Because maybe we're doing it without realizing it. So one of the beautiful parts about this kind of practice is that we can take things in really bite-sized chunks. You know, it really is one breath at a time. That's actually all you can do, isn't it? You can't do 10 breaths at a time. When you remember mindfulness, when mindfulness comes in, all you've got in front of you is a little bit of the breath. That's all you've got. And your job is just to connect with that. That instant of the experience of breathing. Or if you're not using the breath, presence. Or whatever the practice is. You know, the sensation of the body sitting on the ground. It's just in bite-sized chunks. So if we want to try and get out from underneath this crazed spiritual perfectionist that we can sometimes find that we have inside us, it seems to me that the way we're going to be able to do that is in bite-sized chunks. So just by thinking like either, yeah, so we're here, okay, think of it like this. We're people in the world and we're interested in meditation and we come here because we want to get enlightened. Okay, this is just the traditional way of looking at it. It might not be right for each of us, but think of it like this. We come here, we want to get enlightened. We have to do something to get enlightened. Either we know what enlightenment is, or we don't. Maybe that's a little bit simplistic, but we know what it is, or we don't. If we know what it is, then we haven't got a problem with being a critic, have we? We haven't got problems, in the same sense. We know what to do. We know, you know, I'm guessing, if we're enlightened, our natural responsiveness. Knows how to handle this force which attacks us, this inner critic. So if we're enlightened, it's not a problem. And if we're not enlightened, all we have is an image of what it's like to be enlightened. But we don't actually know, do we? So we can't actually make ourselves like that image, because the image might be wrong. We have an image of what it's like to be enlightened, and we try and make ourselves like that image. Or another way is thinking about what we imagine progress is like in practice. So, maybe we have ideas about what should happen this week. Maybe we have ideas about what it will be like when we discover deep mindfulness or something. But that's just an image we have, isn't it? And if we try and make that image happen, it gets exhausting. And then we're always comparing ourselves to this image, and again we're in the same negotiation, the same strategy to try and make progress happen. So coming back to the bite-sized chunks piece, all we really need to do is learn to connect with how it is, not try and force it to be how it should be. Okay, that's just the shift in the emphasis. So think of it this way. We're part of nature, aren't we? We're like natural creatures, we're made up of the elements of the earth. We're an expression of nature. But is nature tidy or is nature messy? I mean, in a certain way, you look at the floor of a forest and it's just a mess. There's things everywhere. Things just fall where they fall and they all get tangled up and knocked around, and it's just a kind of a mess. If your bedroom looked like a forest floor, your friends would say, mate, you've got a really messy bedroom. You had like stuff all over the floor. But in a way, we're like that. It's kind of our humanness, it's our nature, that it's messy. things just fall where they fall, and they move how they move, and it's not always tidy, and that's not a mistake. So we don't need to be a crazed perfectionist trying to tidy it all up and get it perfect. That's not our practice. That doesn't work. That's exhausting and painful, and that's kind of how we live our lives in some ways. So what other options do we have? Well, we can open to it as it is. That is a doorway for us. So literally, right this second, how is it now? In your belly, in your heart, in your mood, in your thoughts. We're in a warm room, I'm talking, there's a lot of tiredness around, there's a lot of interest, there's commitment, there's uncertainty. It's unfolding by itself. Can we allow it just to be how it is? And yet still know it as it is. Still recognize that we have this capacity of awareness. So it's messy, it's like this. Ah. Can we relax with it and deeply allow ourselves to be as we are, with all our unrelaxedness? Can we allow our unrelaxedness to be there too? And know it, and connect, and recognize that we can be aware of our experience. We can put ourselves under the spotlight. And when you're sitting here with your eyes closed sometimes, or your eyes open, which is fine to do by the way, opening one's eyes in sitting practice, it can feel like just a crazy storm, a crazy mess. Energy moving this way, tiredness, pulsing, frustration, wondering, distraction, la 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 la. It's just can be moving. We can be like in a massive weather system, and that's completely okay. It's completely allowed to be like that, honestly. But the challenge is, can we really believe that? Can we really let it be like that and meet it? So, yeah, one time later in the week, we're going to do a guided forgiveness meditation practice. And I've explored this a little bit on retreat. It often comes with, along with the loving kindness practices and the compassion practices, which Caroline was talking a little bit about this afternoon. The thing about the inner critic is it's so blaming. It's so blaming yourself and others for being wrong, for getting it wrong, for causing me pain, for not being good enough. You know, what does forgiveness feel like? How would it be to say right now to oneself, whatever harm I have intentionally or unintentionally caused myself, I completely forgive you. I completely forgive myself. For whatever harm I've caused the people in this room, intentionally or unintentionally, please forgive me. For whatever harm you've caused me, whether you meant to or not, I forgive you. Does that feel good? Does that feel like the kind of space you want to work in? You know, it's like we can forgive, we can release out of blame. We can release out of being victim. We can release out of being judging other people, judging ourselves. We can release out of it. And when we release out of this blame, what we start to actually awaken to is something that you can't really measure. Does that sound interesting? Something that you can't actually measure. On one hand, we've got the inner critic, the judge, the force that wants to keep us small, that compares us to an ideal image and judges whether we succeed or fail. If we succeed, we inflate and we feel really brilliant. If we fail, we deflate and feel really crap. That's based on measuring. Critical measuring of ourselves and others in the world. And then on the other hand, we have the measurelessness of truth, maybe. The qualities of love and kindness, compassion, joy and equanimity. There's a group of teachings which we may mention. Caroline was talking about them a little bit this afternoon, I know. These four ways that love dances and moves and expresses itself are sometimes called the immeasurables. The four immeasurables. They're measureless. You can't fix them, you can't limit their growth, there's no end to their growth. There's no end to their potential depth. And it also makes sense to me to say that they're based on not measuring. We're not harshly criticizing and judging ourselves and other people in the world. It's like, how do we measure? Obviously we need to measure, we need to be able to function. Measuring's not bad. But are we bound to measure? Are there other options? Is there some capacity in us which can meet life fully without measuring it, without judging it unkindly? So as we're here these few days together, exploring what it's like to show up to the messiness of our lives, be aware if you're measuring your progress. Be aware if you're measuring your self against an ideal. And see if that feels like it's helpful. See what it's like to be deeply forgiving about losing undistractedness a million times, about losing the sensations of the breathing a million times. Can we be deeply forgiving and still call up the curiosity to start again? It is possible, and I hope to continue tasting that with you these few days here we have together this week. So just as we finish the talk now, a gentle reminder that here we are, exploring awareness. So let's just spend a few moments together. We're allowed to move, we don't have to move. If you want to be in a certain posture, you're welcome to. But just see if you're aware or not. Is there awareness happening? Let's just sit here for 10 seconds and explore. In our direct experience, are we aware? How do we know we're aware? What kind of effort does it take to ask this question?